Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, a headline that was coming out of the Washington Post recently calls the idea of screening Syrian refugees based on religion shameful. That's a quote from the president. It actually says Obama calls the idea of screening Syrian refugees based on religion shameful, and he defends the White House strategy. Now, in that article, as you go down through it and read it, it says this, speaking to reporters in Turkey on Monday, President Obama said his approach to countering the so-called Islamic State, quote, is a strategy that ultimately is going to work, unquote, but that the terrorist networks can still exact serious damage worldwide. Well, right there I could take issue with a lot of it. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that he said he didn't have a strategy in order to address the Islamic State. So now apparently he has one. I'm not exactly sure what that strategy is. Maybe you are. I'm not. But anyways, he says, hold on, just wait a little while, and this is actually going to work ultimately. Meanwhile, thousands are being put to death while we're waiting around for whatever this strategy is to actually kick in. The article goes on then to say this. I couldn't resist a little bit of commentary there. But the article goes on to say this, but understand that one of the challenges that we have in this situation, this is President Obama still speaking here and quoted in the article, is that if you have a handful of people who don't mind dying, they can kill a lot of people, unquote. Obama said at a news conference after the conclusion of the group of 20 summit there, and he says, quote, that this is one of the challenges of terrorism. It's not their sophistication or a particular weaponry that they possess, but it is the ideology that they carry with them and their willingness to die, unquote. Again, if I just add a little bit of commentary, then, okay, we understand what terrorism is. You know, this is one of those Captain Obvious moments. We get what terrorism is. We understand how it's working. Are we at the point now that we're just defining, or addressing, restating what the problem is? We need more than that. The article goes on then to say Obama also pointedly addressed the issue of whether the United States and the other countries should continue to accept refugees, given the fact that one of the participants, I think it's two now, in the Paris plot may have come with Syrian migrants. He said the United States would continue to accept more refugees from Syria and elsewhere, though, quote, only after subjecting them to rigorous screening and security checks, unquote. How do we do that? They're coming from a war-torn country. Do you call up Assad and say, hey, we got this guy here wanting to come in. Can you tell us who he is? There's no records that we can go back to look at. There's nothing there. That, you know, it's all been destroyed in the war. There's nobody there working with us. So I don't know how this vetting is taking place. But he goes on, slamming the door in their faces would be a betrayal of our value or wisdom. He said, our nations can welcome refugees who desperately seeking safety and ensure our own security. We must do both. Without directly naming GOP candidates, he went on to talk a little bit apparently about Ted Cruz and how he should understand this since he came from Cuba. But the point that I want to get to is the point where the president says this final statement here. He says this, when I hear folks say that, well, maybe we should just admit the Christians and not the Muslims. When I hear political leaders suggesting that there would be some sort of a religious test for which a person who is fleeing a war-torn country is admitted, when some of these folks themselves have come from families who benefited from protection when they were fleeing political persecution, that's shameful, he said, his voice rising. That's not America. That is not who we are. We don't have religious tests to our compassion. Now, that's the point I want to zero in on, religious tests. And I want to expand it out because we've seen this idea of religious tests in a couple of regions. We've seen now the question of should we have religious tests for refugees, and we've also seen should we have religious tests for those who are running for office. Both of those two points I want to look at on the program today. I want to look at what should we have some sort of questions about a person's religion in order to better understand who they are and what their intents are in both those running for office as well as those wanting access to the United States, the refugees who want to come in. Here to talk about that subject is Dr. Greg Fraser. He is a professor of history and political studies at the Master's College. You can check out more about Dr. Fraser himself as well as the Master's College by going to their website at www.masters.edu. Dr. Fraser, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Good to be here, Kevin.
Well, let's take the first question about, now, let's leave the refugees just for a minute here, and let's talk a little bit about should there be some sort of a religious questions about the person's religion that is running for office. And we're doing this in the background of a number of stories that had come out not that long ago. For instance, Ben Carson saying he couldn't support a Muslim president. Donald Trump brought up Ben Carson's Seventh-day Adventism. Should that be a question? And so forth. We're always faced with this around campaign time. Does the religion of the candidate matter?
Well, constitutionally, there's, of course, in Article 6, the religious test ban, which says that no religious test can be made concerning who can run for office. But that only applies to who can run for office. It doesn't, of course, control who people are willing to vote for. And those are two different issues. I would contend, actually, that Mitt Romney lost in 2012 because he's a Mormon. And a large number of evangelicals in particular just stayed home. They didn't vote. If Romney had gotten the same votes that John McCain had gotten, he would have won in 2012. People talk about, you know, if he had reached out to the Hispanic community and whatnot. He didn't really need any of that. All he needed was the votes that McCain got, and he didn't get them because a lot of people stayed home because he was Mormon. So, Ben Carson, we talked about this before, whether it was wise or not, what he said, and if he should have put his caveat in as to why he said it sooner and faster. But he has every right to decide that he doesn't want to vote for a Muslim or a Baptist or a Presbyterian or anything else. What people choose to do with their vote is up to them, and they can take religion into account. It's just that we can't limit or control who gets to run for office on the basis of religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Dr. Brent Carson bringing that up, he then developed that thought a little bit in subsequent articles because so many people attacked him for that. And he was basically saying, you know, that in Islam they want to implement Sharia. Sharia is at odds with the laws of the United States, and therefore there would be this insurmountable or irreconcilable difference between the guiding principle of an Islamist versus the presidency of the United States. And he was saying, I can't see how those two would work out, right?
Right. And again, so there's a case where someone could certainly take religion into account, particularly since that religion is so intertwined in the civil and political process as to have its own set of laws that certainly in many ways run counter to the Constitution. And so there's a case where an individual is perfectly within their bounds to take religion into account, I would say, but the system can't take it into account.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep the candidate from running on the basis of religion.
Now, Dr. Carson had this kind of turned back upon him a little bit when Donald Trump seemed to make an issue out of his Seventh-day Adventism. And one of the things that I thought about Adventism is they were typically pacifists. And I agree that, like you said, that the person's religious background, I want a person's religious background to inform their decision making. My religion does, of Christianity, and I can't see how a person can separate those two things. But in this particular case, I don't know that Dr. Carson is a pacifist or if he holds those viewpoints, but I do know that historically speaking, that Adventism embraced the idea of a pacifist viewpoint. And I have a hard time wrapping my mind around the notion of the president being a pacifist, especially when we're in the midst of an age of terror, when we have to, you know, do so much in order to oppose the terrorism around the world and so forth. Is that a legitimate thought to keep in mind as we think about how that religion could impact a person?
Yeah, I think clearly from what he has said in the debates and what he has said on the stump and so forth, that Carson himself is not a pacifist. I would just say this, and I went and looked at the at Adventist websites, and they say that they are no longer pacifist.
Hmm.
They say that was an original sort of founding idea that started to fade in the 1960s, and by the Vietnam era, they had basically dropped it.
They switched it out, I think, for non-combatant now, right?
Right.
Right.
Yes. Right.
And,
they also allowed their people to be soldiers.
Okay.
So,
because the non-combatant.
So it might, not that it's neither here nor there, because it only matters specifically of Ben Carson what
sure.
his view is. He seems in the what he says not to rule out using military action. So,
right.
But you're right. For someone to be the commander in chief, the president of the United States is the commander in chief of the military and has to make military decisions and give military orders. And so obviously that would be somewhat problematic if that person were a pacifist.
Mm-hmm. Let me just for our listeners' sake. The idea of non-combatant then would be that you would participate in the war effort, but you would do so in roles that don't involve direct combat. So you would, a lot of them went into the medical field and so forth. So they worked in the medical hospitals and behind the scenes and in other, many, many other jobs that are involved in the military that don't involve actually shooting and taking the life of another individual. That's what we mean by non-combatant. I think that there is a positive side to Ben Carson if he has been influenced at all by, you know, the pacifist viewpoints or non-combatant viewpoint. As some people say, hey, I want somebody in the White House who has a reticence to go to war. You know, he's not a war hawk. You know, that he's going to think about it more carefully and not send our men and women in the military, you know, just out on a whim. And so maybe that would be a good quality for somebody to have and to just be more cautious about sending people out. So it's got its good points to it as well. So the basic, to summarize then, with the idea about whether there should be religious tests for those running for office, I guess we would say, and you tell me if you agree, that it helps inform us as to who the candidate is and what sort of views they hold, but we can't use just whatever denomination or religion they hold to as a litmus test as to whether or not they should actually be in that office. Is that fair?
Well, we can as voters.
Okay.
But the system can't in terms of who they allow to run.
Okay.
You can use whatever litmus test you want to use as a voter. You can decide, I don't like left-handed people, and so I'm not going to vote for any left-handed president.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a voter, you can decide not to vote for Romney because he's a Mormon or not to vote for John Kerry because he's a Catholic or whatever. But in terms of the system, the no religious test clause doesn't allow there to be a religious test in terms of who's allowed to run.
Mm.
So
okay. Let's take the same thought then and move it over into the area of the refugees, which obviously is a hot-button issue being debated just yesterday here in Greenville, a very highly attended Greenville County Council meeting took place in which Greenville voted that they would not use funds and participate. They were rejecting the president's plan for bringing refugees into this area. So not just them on a county basis, but obviously now I think it's, what is it, 35 governors or something across the country, a huge amount of pushback to this whole idea of refugees. And many people are saying, I don't know that I've heard people say, and I don't know where this question originated, that we have to only allow Christians to come in and not Muslims. I don't think that that's really the question that's being asked. It's just whether we should consider the idea that if they do say that they are Muslims, that we look at this more stringently because of the horrific crimes that are being committed in the name of Islam around the globe and even here at home in some instances. So how do we reconcile that topic related to refugees?
Well, this is sort of where I would say was sort of where the rubber meets the road concerning the president and his unwillingness to link the jihadist terrorism or the extremist violence or whatever phrases he comes up with, his refusal to link that with Islam. So from his perspective, since he refuses to link the two, and again, I'm not saying that all is, you know, Islamic people or all Muslims are terrorists, et cetera. That's the false narrative that people want to take you down then in order to discredit. But certainly the people who are the terrorists are Muslim. It's not that all Muslims are terrorists, but the terrorists are Muslim. And so there is a connection there. But the president is unwilling or unable for some reason to make that linkage. And so for him, that's why he doesn't think it's a legitimate connection. But it's common practice to have qualifications and screening criteria for allowing refugees into the country. I mean, throughout our history, whenever we have accepted refugees, there have been qualifications and screening criteria. And so that's not an outrageous thing. We don't just accept anyone into the country. And again, this is not something that is a right either. There is no right to live in the United States or to be in the United States as a country, or else we wouldn't have the entry points at airports where you have to go through customs and show a passport and those kind of things. There are qualifications, there are screening procedures, and so the only question is can we screen Syrian refugees because of a particular terror threat? And I think that's perfectly reasonable. Mm-hmm. There's no right to enter the United States. We are doing someone a favor by letting them in. And so you can have criteria, you can have qualifications, and even in the sense of accepting Christians, as much as we would, as Christians, would want to help Christians, the problem is with these people that are engaging in terrorist activity, you know, they don't wear a sign that says, "I'm a terrorist."
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell. And as you pointed out in your intro, the idea that we can do some kind of screening and check the records when it's a war-torn country that's being run by Assad and in many cases by the people who want to send the terrorists here, that we can accept that as, you know, legitimate background check is just, I think, foolish.
There is
and
a...
so,
okay. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to interject and just say that there is a massive push right now on the by evangelicals to basically say this, and this is actually the title of one of the articles, this one coming out of Sojourners, which, of course, is a pretty left-leaning Christian organization, but it says rejecting refugees is rejecting Christ. And so now the pressure is being put on that if you say no to the refugees coming in, that you are basically saying no to Jesus, that it's as if Jesus is knocking and trying to come into the United States and you are stopping him from coming in. That is put in such simplistic terms and really ignores the complexity of the situation, and then, you know, makes people, especially Christians, feel guilty if they, you know, don't just willy-nilly, without any discernment, open the doors to everyone. But that's not real the way that we should look at this, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the purpose of it, is to make people feel guilty so that they will go along with their policy aims. And again, this is related to something that we talked about the last time you and I talked, on the issue of socialism. Again, what they're doing is taking a personal instruction and making it a national instruction.
Good point.
And so you and I don't have refugees at our door or in our neighborhood who need help. This is applying that personal instruction to a national situation, which is an entirely different situation. It's apples and oranges. And so I think that's completely legitimate. You know, I was just thinking, this is somewhat tongue in cheek, but I'm trying to get to a point. If the president is so concerned about these refugees and not concerned about the security issues and whatnot, then why not set up a tent city on the White House lawn and bring all those people in and let them live right out, or for that matter, in the White House. There are 500 people who have offices in the White House. How about we clear those out and make housing? You know, it's always easy to say that this is a principle, this is our values, et cetera, as long as you're asking someone else to be endangered by it. But I'm not sure that the president would want to have them on his doorstep, and I'm not sure the Secret Service would be excited about it either.
Mm-hmm. You know, all these people that are advocating that we do this, I imagine that they all have doors on their houses, and that those doors get locked at nighttime. You know, if we were to think about this just on a more personal basis, somebody comes and knocks on your door and says, you know, I don't have a place to stay. I want to come in and stay at your house. I don't think anybody without any discernment is going to, or asking them questions to figure out, well, who are you and what are you doing here and what's your situation and what is your intent? And, you know, a lot of questions that would try to determine exactly what the situation is about. Nobody would just open their door and say, well, come on in. You know, that it's not right for me to ask you any of these questions. In fact, it's unchristian for me to do so. And now you're putting your family, your friends, your neighbors in harm's way because of your ridiculous attitude towards allowing people to come in. I know it's a silly illustration, but I think that's what we're doing without any discernment. Without any method or a mechanism for telling who this person is and what their intents are, we're just blindly opening the doors to people, and I don't think that that's a Christian notion at all.
Right, and we should also emphasize again that that not all Muslims are terrorists, but sure. The problem is that the terrorists mix themselves in with other people, and they use that, as you pointed out, at least one, maybe two of those who came in as Syrian immigrants were attackers in Paris. And mm-hmm. you know, they say it's only 10,000 people. Okay, well, they'll say that only, you know, 100 of them are terrorists. Well, 100 terrorists can do a whole lot of damage.
Yes.
And that's the issue. It's not that America would want to necessarily keep out Muslims, but that the terrorists are Muslims. And one other point that I think is interesting that some are mentioning is that if the president was so concerned about the values and the lives of these people and having compassion, why didn't he do something when they were in Syria?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't
exactly.
he do something when hundreds of thousands of them were being killed and slaughtered? And why didn't he do something to prevent this crisis that has now come to our shores. And mm-hmm. it's always easier to sort of be high-handed and lecture people on values when it's convenient for you.
And these articles and that seem to imply that we are not helping at all. We have helped. We, the citizens of the United States, we, the Christian community, have helped to the tune of billions of dollars already.
$4 billion.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
$4 billion.
$4 billion. To the tune of billions of dollars, we've already helped. It's not as if we say we don't want to do anything. We just don't want to do a helping that hurts. We don't want to create a problem by trying to alleviate a problem, and that's where the issue really is. Dr. Fraser, thank you so much again for joining us to talk through these issues. We really appreciate your insight. Appreciate the work you're doing there at the Masters College as well.
Thank you, Kevin.
That was Dr. Greg Fraser. He's the Professor of History and Political Studies at the Masters College. Their website is www.masters.edu. It's www.masters.edu. You can go out to their website in order to find out more about the college and more about their individual professors that we interview here on a regular basis. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, He said you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.